Hello once again and welcome back to the Vox Pop, WAMC's live afternoon call-in talk show. I'm Alan Chartok and you're you. In his State of the Union address last month, President Barack Obama called on Congress to pass an increase to the federal minimum wage, raising it from its current rate of $7.25 per hour to $9 per hour. This week, House and Senate Democrats introduced legislation to raise the minimum wage to $10.10 an hour, more than a dollar higher than Obama proposed. Iowa Senator Tom Harkin and California Representative George Miller say their bill introduced yesterday would boost the minimum by 2015, followed by automatic annual increases tied to changes in the cost of living. Republicans are thus far rejecting the idea, saying it would hurt employers. In New York State, the Assembly voted last night, following 4 hours of debate, to increase the minimum wage to $9 an hour, with automatic increases tied to inflation putting pressure on Senate Republicans who are seeking business tax cuts in a potential legislative deal. Today, we want your outlook on the minimum wage. Should it be raised? If so, by how much? Would a large increase hurt business owners and therefore the overall economy? Give us a call, 1-800-348-2551, 1-800-348-2551. I need to hear from you. Right now, your chances of getting in are 100%. In other words, nobody is on the phone right now. That leaves me sitting here like a bird in the wilderness. You can also post comments at the bottom of today's show page on the Vox Pop section of our website, wamc.org/VoxPop. You can comment below today's Vox Pop wall post on our Facebook page, facebook.com/WAMC Radio, or you can tweet your questions and comments at WAMC Vox Pop. There is a secondary question, a bonus question, if you want to answer it. It, of course, means you got to keep it clean. But what is your secret, what is it that you really love? In Roselle's case, I could tell you it's to have her feet rubbed. In other people's, it's chocolate. In other people's cases, it's, ice cream. Or you can talk about the minimum wage. So far, now there are three people on the phone. That's good. That's very good because, I get scared. It makes me neurotic, more neurotic, sitting here and, being all alone. Can you imagine what that's like for friends? To sit in a studio and now to face the great unknown. It's like, the whale in Moby Dick. It is worse than that. So now there are four people on the phone. That's good. Five people on the phone. That's even better. 1-800-348-2551. We'll go to Stephen in Rensselaer. Okay, Rensselaer. No, Rensselaer. Okay, here we go. Stephen, you're on.
Yes, Alan, I'd like to refer to this argument has been going around a long time about minimum wage, and it sort of goes through the same cycle. I remember years ago on Firing Line, which was William F. Buckley Jr.'s program that used to be on WMHT, he had his guest was John Kenneth Galbraith, the economist, and they were talking about this precise issue of the minimum wage, and it was the same thing like with Buckley maintaining that it cuts back on jobs, the same thing you hear now. Right. And William and John Kenneth Galbraith's reply to that was that the union, the minimum wage is in effect sort of a union for the very poorest segment of society. And I think that still applies, and he was really right on that. And there was one interchange that I've always remembered where, Buckley maintained his position about the minimum wage, and John Kenneth Galbraith said to Buckley, he said, "Would you like to live on it?"
Exactly.
And I think even Buckley was at least temporarily taken aback by that.
Well, yes, and that I think is a lot more than just being funny, because a lot of the people who were so concerned about all of the people who are going to get minimum wage and how there won't be jobs for them and the rest of it, I think what they're really interested in is keeping as much of their money as they can.
Okay. Yeah, but when you think of William F. Buckley, whose father was an oil millionaire from Mexico,
exactly,
who grew up but
exactly.
in the very comfortable circumstances, just Galbraith's point about living on it was very telling.
Terrific.
That's something to keep in mind.
Well, Stephen, I want a particular thank you for being the first caller today and getting me out of, having to do this and just talk for an hour without anybody being there. I've never had to do it, but you never know. Thanks, Stephen.
Okay.
Bye.
You bet.
Okay. and we'll go to Rocco in Rosendale. Hi, my old friend. How are you?
How you doing, Alan?
Good.
You know, my heart bleeds for these guys who say that this is going to kill business, you know? We've heard this song so many times before. It's just another repeat. So I don't think it's going to kill business.
Well, you know, it's going to be very hard to know what the independent variable will be. So, for example, if we have Sequester putting, you know, tens of thousands of people out of work, at the same time we have a raise in the minimum wage, how will you know if things go bad, what did it?
This is true, but while you mentioned Sequester and that kind of stuff, maybe I can mention something about this whole thing about these deficits and how they say that we should live like a household.
Sure.
And, you know, shouldn't live beyond our means.
Yep.
But, you know, there's bad debt and there's good debt. We don't all live beyond our means because a lot of us carry a mortgage. And
right.
For many of us, that mortgage is way beyond our annual income.
Oh, yeah.
We're spending just like the federal government.
Yeah, but Rocco, just to play the devil's advocate with you for a second, what if you bought a house that you really couldn't afford? Get it?
Well, that's... And, I understand that.
And the dumb bank gave you a mortgage because, you know, some secretary of HUD said, you know, get everybody into a house.
Right. Okay, but that's not where I'm, that's not what
there's,
I
by
was
By the way,
trying.
Rocco, there's a lot more to what I just said than you might realize, but go ahead. Just
I
think
understand.
About who the secretary of HUD was. Go ahead.
Right, okay. I have to think about that for a minute, but in the meantime... you know, to get back to my point is that,
yeah.
You know, we might buy a house within our means.
No. Oh, yeah, within our means, yeah.
And but it's still a lot more than our income.
Yes, we got it.
Hey, good debt.
Hey, Rocco, that's the second time around. You know what happens on the second
right,
time
so,
around.
So wait. I have to bring up the other side of this point, which I haven't brought up but even a first time. So... the federal government should spend their money on good things like roads and schools and housing for poor people like that. And by doing so, they could do it by, instead of raising the minimum wage, lowering the maximum income to back what it was when Eisenhower was president. Ha, ha, ha.
Yeah, but wait. What if, Rocco, what if the problem is that a good deal of what taxpayers are paying now is to pay off the debt. You know, I mean, when you're paying off a mortgage, let's say you're paying $2,000 a month, would you, you know, that would be expendable income for other things if you didn't have to pay off the mortgage, right?
Right. That's why, and this is the second time around for this, so please don't cut me off.
That'll be the third time around. Yeah, go ahead.
That's why we have to lower the maximum income.
Lower okay. The maximum income.
Income. By raising taxes to the levels that they were when Eisenhower was president.
Okay. Rocco, as always, good to hear from you. Say hello to all my friends in Rosendale. Thank you.
Will do.
Yeah.
Bye.
Let's go to Kathy and Troy. Kathy and Troy, you're on.
Hi. Thanks for taking the call.
Sure.
Definitely, I think the minimum wage should be raised. And as a matter of fact, WAMC aired a Richard Wolf interview with Bill Moyers.
Yeah, yeah.
Bill Moyers interviewed Richard Wolf. And he actually said, I think it was either $16 or $18 an hour that the minimum wage would be if it had increased along with cost of living.
Uh-huh. That's
so
a very good point. Yeah.
So it reflects such a disparity in even raising our minimum wage just to $10, we're still not making enough for the cost of living. So we really need to raise income, I mean, so much more drastic than what it is. And it's the only way to get us out of this economy. And for private businesses to say that they can't afford it, I know a lot of small private businesses, and they actually pay their workers. Because these are family-owned businesses. They pay their workers a lot more than minimum wage, and they always have. It's your big chains that don't. Your McDonald's and, you know, all of these chain stores all over the place, they're the ones that have the money and don't want to pay.
Well, we've had several calls today this morning when we were doing this question, you know, with Joe Donahue, people calling up and saying, well, their brother owns a small business and the small business will be out of business if they have to pay the minimum wage. You reject that?
No, I do. Absolutely.
Okay. Have you ever worked for the minimum wage?
Yes. A long time ago. long time ago. But, you know, I got promoted and kept having my pay increase throughout time. And I worked in the private sector. Mm. And actually, I think the public sector almost needs to take the burden off of municipalities. They should almost double a teacher's wage. Don't include any, you know, pension benefits or anything like that, but double their wages. All public sector workers should have their wages double.
Because?
Because it would give them more disposable income to do with what they want. Put it into health savings account, put it into their own 401k, do whatever. It would create a lot of the uncertainty and the guaranteed pension benefits that a lot of municipalities right now are faced with.
Okay, Kathy, you make some very good points. I appreciate your call very much, Kathy. I hope you believe that. Thanks again.
Thank you.
Yeah.
Bye.
Okay, we'll take a short break. We'll be right back.
Support for WAMC comes from Skidmore College Master's Program, offering individualized graduate studies in a wide range of interdisciplinary fields. Masters at skidmore.edu. Story's Nursery, Freehold, New York, a gardener's destination featuring houseplants, seeds, and seedling starter kits, pruning and fruit tree maintenance tools available, open Monday through Saturday, 9 to 4:30 p.m., closed Sundays, storiesnursery.com. Vision Excel Eye Care, Lake Katrine, New York, providing eye exams, eye care, dry eye therapy, glaucoma management, and specialty contact lens fitting, where eyewear is an art, Facebook or visionexceleyecare.com. Molly Cantor Pottery Studio and Gallery, Shelburne Falls, Massachusetts, featuring pottery with images of plants, animals, and New England life, offering gift certificates for clay classes for adults and teens, mollycantor.com. And Hudson Opera House, presenting solo pianist Jenny Lynn with works from Mozart, Bernstein, Stravinsky, and selections from her new release, Get Happy, this Saturday at 8 p.m., hudsonoperahouse.org.
Our next guest is a puzzlement to me. I've never understood something, and I'll put her on right now, and I'm going to ask you, is it Andrea or Andrea?
Andrea.
And how does somebody know that? I mean, as you read the name Andrea, I have a prospective daughter-in-law who is Andrea. How would you know this?
That's why I usually go by the name of Andy.
I get it, but either way, you have a 50% chance of being wrong here, don't you?
I think probably if you meet the person,
you'll know whether she's an Andrea,
right?
Or an Andrea.
Kind of Andrea sounds a little bit more fancy than I will ever be.
Oh, interesting. Okay, how are things in Fort Plain?
Fort Plain is a little snowy, but we'll probably get more tonight.
Okay, go ahead. Your deal.
Okay, first of all, I can't remember. I heard someone on the news last night, and I wish I could remember whether it was the New York legislator or federal. I believe it was federal. And they were all worried because if you raise the minimum wage, all these kids, all these teenagers were going to be out of work. What planet does he live on? Has he visited a mall lately to see who's really working at minimum wage? Yeah. Over the holidays, they hire some kids, but most of the places that I know, and I used to be a security guard in one of the malls in Albany, the people working there are trying to support themselves and their kids and everything else, and they're not high schoolers. They're people who actually have real lives and real families, and, you know, nobody's subsidizing them. And most of them have three jobs, two or three, depending on how many kids they have. And if you raise the minimum wage, maybe these people could get along with one or two jobs, which leaves at least one job available for somebody else to get a job.
Yeah, the other problem is that there just aren't enough jobs, and it's going to get worse rather than better because, obviously, you know, the more you automate and the rest, and that is something that this country doesn't really, isn't really paying a lot of attention to.
True.
Did you work for minimum wage when you were a security guard?
started out at minimum wage. Actually, the one place I worked, they started out below minimum wage, which was illegal, but I wasn't about to fight them because I'd lose my job.
Exactly. You're not the one who arrested the guy with the T-shirt, are you?
One of them. But now you're thinking of the one at Colony Center.
Yeah, I wasn't
that guy who the ones I threw out had obscene T-shirts.
Oh, I see. Okay. And do you have a secret like or dislike something like chocolate or, you know, having your feet rubbed or something like that?
Oh, real massages from like a real masseur or masseuse where they actually dig into the muscles and leave you so relaxed you can't move.
Oh, yeah, yeah, no, I know. I've been there, done that. Thank you. Appreciate it.
All right, thanks.
Nice call.
Bye, Alan.
Bye. We'll go to Mohammed in East Long Meadow. Okay, Mohammed, you're on.
Hey, thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
I just want to say that this shouldn't even be like a issue for debate. I mean, this is tied to the cost of living. So, like in the 1960s,
yep,
minimum wage was lower, but it actually could support the cost of living. Now it can't, and you know we should just adjust it for inflation at the very least. Why is it that congressional Republicans are the only ones against this?
Why do you think? Answer your own question.
Well, I think it has something to do with ideology. It's really just it feels like a collectivist idea to them, so they want to reject it. But they're not. They're not against it.
What do you mean they're not against it?
I mean that it's their ideology. It's they wish to be, you know, very anti-collectivist.
Well, that's a nice way of putting it. But the other way of putting it is they may well be out of a job because they have to run in a primary. And the people who vote in those primaries are getting further and further right. And they know it.
Most of those people live on minimum wage.
Which people live on minimum wage? I'm confused. Go ahead.
The Tea Party.
You're being sarcastic, right? No, you're not. Okay. Well, Mohammed, I thank you for your call. Appreciate it very much.
All right.
Let's go to Susan in Richmond. Okay, Susan, you're on.
Hi, Alan. Thanks for taking my call.
I'm delighted to talk to you, as usual.
I just have a couple of points to make. First of all, I completely agree that the minimum wage has got to be raised. I work as a nurse in a nursing home. The people who do the lion's share of the work are women with children.
How much you make? Am I allowed to ask how much you make?
Yeah, nurses in nursing homes do not make that much. I make $23 an hour.
Okay.
And the aides who do the lion's share of the work, and that means the hands-on care of everybody's beloved mom and dad.
Yeah, yeah.
Which is really hard work.
Yes.
It's washing, cleaning, taking to the bathroom, dressing, feeding, blah, blah, blah.
Yeah, yeah.
They get $11 an hour.
Yeah.
Which is a crime. It's a shame. And those women have to carry three jobs. And basically, I look at the minimum wage right now, I view it as legalized slavery.
Mm-hmm.
I did hear a while ago, and I have not been able to confirm it simply because I don't know how, that one of the Scandinavian countries has a law in place that the most highly paid person in a company or organization may only make a certain percentage above the lowest paid worker, which to me seems like a grand idea.
But there will be people who say, you know, the reason that the United States is the greatest capitalist country in the world is because we don't make those kinds of rules, and that, you know, what you'll do is stifle creativity and frankly, in my mind, greed, you know, which is a great motivator. How do you respond to that?
Well, I respond to it by saying I think the greatest country bit in the world is a myth. I don't think it is. I think we have horrible health for our people. We have lower rates of our death rates. People die at a younger age in the United States than they do in other countries. We have one of our infant death rates is on par with third world countries. That, to me, is not the greatest nation in the world.
Susan, I'm sure that the people you work with are proud of you. I am, and thank you for calling. Appreciate it very much.
Thank you very much, Alan.
Right. Let's go to Malcolm in Sunderland, Massachusetts. Malcolm, you're on.
Good afternoon, Alan.
Hey.
Thank you again.
Yeah.
Well, a quick comment about the legalized slavery thing that she just threw out there. Check on the prison system going on these days. But what I actually called to respond to, of course, is the minimum wage. And I do the big thing I hear a lot of people saying. My son, even my 14-year-old son, was arguing this with me a little bit recently. You know, if what about little businesses that can't afford for the wages to go up? Yeah. You know, and someone brought up today. I heard, I think it was in the morning show, maybe it was a little earlier. You know, example of the YMCA where he worked.
Yeah, I heard that.
So you know, I tried to use what little logic I have in my mind for this. I'm not, some expert on finances, but I tried to look at it like this. If I'm a small business or even the Y, a not-for-profit or whatever they are, and I've got, say, 10 employees, maybe 50 employees, and all their wages are going up, let's just say I decide to pass that on, that cost on to the people around me by raising, the cost of, say, membership at the Y,
right,
or raising prices a little bit. Now, then how's that going to affect things? Will I do less business? Well, all the people around me in my community just had all of their minimum wages go up. So unless I'm, doing something totally unnecessary for people that they still just can't afford and don't need, they're going to come in and buy my services. If it's a needed service or product, people are still going to need it, and they're going to come in and buy it, and the economy will still, work. No problem.
What did your 14-year-old son say to this?
I think he did his best to follow it, and he did pretty well. We're at a point where we're trying to get to the point where we just communicate positively about these things, and then think about it for a while, kind of
right.
thing, instead of it just being an argument where people are entrenched.
You're
in
wrong, and you're right.
Yeah.
No, does anybody ever throw a plate at the dinner table?
No. We get a little frustrated at times, certainly, but no throwing of plates.
So that's really interesting. I think you make a very good case, Malcolm, and I think you're a very bright guy. Did you ever work for the minimum wage yourself?
I certainly have, Alan.
And
yeah.
What was that like?
Well, I was a dishwasher many, many years ago, and in fact have worked for minimum wage at a few different points in my life. And, it's always a struggle if you're working for minimum wage, I can tell you. I mean, it's a struggle. The jobs that you're working at minimum wage are some of the harder jobs to work out there almost every time, as far as I've seen.
You bet.
Yeah.
You bet.
Yeah.
Malcolm, thanks for the call. Appreciate it.
Thank you so much, Alan.
All right. Okay, let's go to Steve in Del Mar. Steve in Del Mar, you're on.
Hi, Alan. Thank you for taking my call. I am a small businessman. In fact, I'm the Del Mar Dog Butler. So you may have heard of me. I don't know.
Indeed. And what is the Del Mar Dog Butler do again?
I'm a professional poop scooper.
Yeah, I think I remember this. Yeah, go ahead.
Once a week, I go clean people's yards. So I have one employee, actually contract employee, but I make sure and pay him well, way over minimum wage. I pay him a pretty strong percentage of the total amount I collect from each person that he works, whose yard he's cleaning.
And what motivates you to do that?
He's a good employee. I want to keep him. He does the job well, and he's dedicated. He never misses a week. I feel like the income disparity, wealth disparity in this country is growing from obscene to obscener, if that's a word.
That's fine.
And, the people in Congress who are fighting against this are people who aren't concerned with making enough money to put food on the table. They're just concerned with how fast their pile of money is growing. And it makes me sick just to think of that. And that's what I had to say. As a small businessman, my take on it is, hell yes, I can afford to pay people more than minimum wage.
I have one last question. Which is not exactly related, but do you charge more for bigger dogs than smaller dogs?
No, in fact, I would prefer bigger dogs. It's easier to find. I do charge for extra dogs.
Oh, extra dogs, yeah.
Per dog, that's what I charge.
Yeah. Okay, and is your worst work when the snow melts? Is that your hardest work?
There's a horrible couple of weeks in there, yeah.
Yeah, because I remember when we had two dogs, fairly large dogs, and they would run around the acre, and at the point at which, the snow melted, that was when it was really horrific.
That's our couple of hell weeks. But we make a lot of money that week, too, because the people people who aren't my regular customers call me and say, can you just do a one-time cleanup?
Oh, so yeah, yeah.
I'm very busy those weeks.
Well, you've made a real impression on me. Thank you so much for calling, Steve.
Thank you.
Yeah. Right. Let's go to Jean in Ellingburg. Okay, Jean, you're on.
Hi. I just wanted to let you know that I believe that they should raise the minimum wage to at least $10 an hour, and that I think it's very, very wrong that we try to think that a man could support his family on 40-hour week at $10 an hour. That's just impossible, and yet people complain about everybody being, those people being on welfare. I don't see how he could do it, bringing home a check over, a little over $300 a week and support a wife and children.
Or vice versa. The wife supporting the husband on $10 a week. 1-800-348-2551. I only say that because this is the first moment, get this, Gene, that all five phones haven't been ringing. So there's one free phone. So I thought, wow, my whole reputation rests on this. And there it is. There it goes. Okay. But, Gene, I wanted to ask you something. Have you ever worked for minimum wage?
Yes, I have. I've worked several times for minimum wage.
What's that like?
It's kind of hard. It's not very pleasant, and you work very hard, and you don't get very much money, and it's very difficult.
And why did you do it? You just needed the money, and therefore there was the work, and you did it.
Yeah, well, I've been married a long time, and we have 9 children, and I waitress, and I worked at a warehouse, and yeah, it's but you need the money, and then, you know, it's difficult. I can't imagine a man today working for $8 and some odd cents an hour. We're supposed to be out there to help each other. And to me, you know, people that just want to put more money in their pockets, these people that own these businesses, they're just getting richer and richer, and people are struggling.
You think there are any people who really are marginal and run marginal businesses? I suspect there are some who aren't just getting richer and richer, but who really can't afford it.
Oh, I don't know. I don't know. I think that they could stand. Everybody needs to look out for each other, and I think if people that are making a profit today could cut back a little bit, and everybody did that and helped out the people that are less fortunate, it would be a much better world.
Hey, Gene, thank you so much for your call. Appreciate it. And I admire you. Thanks. Bye.
Thank you. Yeah. Bye-bye.
Let's go to Jordan in Chatham. Okay, Jordan, you're on.
How's it going, Alan?
Well, you know.
My actual question, I think, you know, this is something that hasn't really been addressed too much.
Well, hold on a second. I'm getting an emergency communication here that apparently, as usual, I screwed it up and gave the front office number as opposed to the number here. And it's 1-800-348-2551. 1-800-348-2551. Okay, Jordan, continue, please.
Well, what I was saying was that my question is, when did the minimum wage be considered part of the middle class, you know, income sector? You know, by definition, the middle class is in the middle, which is, you know, in between poor and rich. And, you know, and not meaning any insult to anyone who's currently, you know, working for minimum wage, but, you know, that was always considered, by definition, the minimum that you could legally earn in the United States. And I just think, you know, I think that's a real issue, is that now we're kind of slowly perceiving the middle class as middle age earners or minimum wage earners.
Okay, I get the premise, but where does the premise come from? Have we said that in our discussion today, that the lowest paid are part of the middle class?
Well, you know, when the Obama administration was first announcing that they were considering raising the minimum wage, some of the references that they made was that it's supposed to help the middle class.
I'll tell you why that was happening. Because in order to win, a politician needs to talk to the middle class, because they're the ones who vote. Interestingly, the poor vote in far fewer numbers than those people who consider themselves middle class. And in fact, as you go up to the top of the scale, those people who are making the most always vote. So, because I think my thesis is that they're defending what they have. So when Obama says the middle class and working poor, he's doing that logistically, knowing he doesn't need to get into trouble by people thinking he's a, quote, socialist.
Well, that's true. And, you know, personally, I agree with a lot of, you know, Obama's initiatives. But, you know, I just think it's kind of a risky area to start, like, public perception, as in, you know, settling for less.
Interesting. Well, Jordan, you've certainly made your point, and I thank you for calling. It's great to see you participating. Thanks again.
Thank you.
Right.
Thank
you. Okay. Let's go to Lou in Newburgh. Okay, Lou, you're on.
Yeah, hi, Alan.
Hey.
I was just calling. As a working person, a working class, I have to say, especially since I'm looking for a job right now, no small businesses are paying minimum wage. All the small businesses are paying way higher than minimum wage. And it's all the bigger corporations, like it has been said, McDonald's, fast food chains, restaurants, which can definitely afford to pay a little bit more than what they do, are the only ones still paying minimum wage.
Well, see, I don't know that. I'm so sorry. I, it's only my job to ask questions. And that is, how do you know that?
Well, I mean,
how do you know that?
Yeah. From my experience, and like the caller you just had, the dog cleaner. I mean, all these people that have, you know, that have small businesses, they value their employees and they take care of their employees because their employees are the ones making them their money.
Well, that certainly is the way we feel here.
I'd have to say any small business that can't afford to pay their employees more than minimum wage, the owner of the company is not working hard enough himself.
Okay.
But
what you're saying is perception rather than you've looked at the, you know, the federal numbers on this, and because you're the second person who said it today, I'm just interested in where this comes from.
I've moved around the country several times in the last 5 years, and I have not seen, you know, going through the newspapers and calling for jobs and going for interviews, I do not see any small businesses with, you know, fewer than, say, even 50 employees that are paying minimum wage.
Okay, Lou, you've made your point. It's a good point, and I appreciate your calling. Thanks again. We're going to take a very, very, very short break. In fact, shorter than all the noise I just made, and we'll be right back.
Support for WAMC comes from Maria College, Albany, New York, offering RN Baccalaureate Completion Program, Associate's Degrees and Professional Certificate Programs, day, evening, weekend, and online classes, mariacollege.edu. New York State Tobacco-Free Community Partners, working to help parents prevent and reduce youth smoking with prevention programs to counter tobacco marketing and help save lives, New York State Tobacco-Free Community Partners at smokefreecapital.org. Earth Angels Veterinary Hospital, Wappingers Falls, an integrated facility that combines conventional and holistic medicine for a 360-degree approach to veterinary care, earthangelsvet.com. Sunflower Natural Foods Market, Woodstock, offering new organic, wild-crafted bulk herbs by the ounce, on-site herbalist and nutritional counselor on Facebook, Twitter, and sunflowernatural.com. And Spirit House, Amherst, Massachusetts, a family-owned wine and spirits retailer for over 40 years, providing wine tastings Saturday afternoons from 3 to 6, spirithaus.com.
We're back. Our wonderful producer, Patrick Donges, otherwise known as Patrick Donges, if you speak in French, is here, and he's going to read a little bit of the social messaging. Go
Bonjour,
ahead.
Alan. We have Daniel on Facebook. Says, I currently make slightly above the minimum wage, and if my earnings were to increase by even a dollar an hour, all of the net gain would go directly back to the businesses who claim to be hurt by the potential increase. Neither I nor anyone else in my economic demographic would be squirreling away these added earnings. We can't afford to. And Donna on WAMC.org says, raise it to $15 an hour, even better to $20. It's been years since anyone could actually live on minimum wage, so the taxpayers are called upon to pick up the slack. Walmart employee communities account for more public assistance than any other corporation. Why are we as taxpayers taking up the slack for them when they are the 40th largest economy in the world? Make them and other labor exploiters pay a living wage with health benefits, and all that tax money sucked up by Walmart and the like returns to the states for education, infrastructure repair, healthcare solutions, etc. It's a no-brainer. Let big business, a.k.a. the shadow government, pay its own bills, including taxes and a fair wage.
Well, Patrick Donish, thank you so much for doing that.
Thank you, Alan.
And for and if people, once again, remind everybody if they want to get in, how they do it?
They can check in at the bottom of today's show page on the Vox Pop section of our website, wamc.org/VoxPop. Comment below today's Vox Pop wall post on our Facebook page, facebook.com/WAMC Radio. Or, of course, you can tweet your questions and comments at WAMC Vox Pop, and that's one word.
Thank you, Patrick.
Thank you, Alan.
Let's go to Mark in Schenectady. Okay, Mark in Schenectady, you're on.
Yes, Alan, thank you very much.
Sure.
I really enjoyed hearing a lot of your listeners call in and give their comments. And hopefully I don't sound like a repetition of a couple of the others. But, you know, myself, I started out in the labor force at age 14 as a paper boy, of all things. You know, making, what is it? I'd make like a nickel of paper. And I have to ride my bike like 5 miles up and down the hilly dirt roads of the Hudson Valley. And, you know, then I progressed to McDonald's, making $2.35 an hour, you know, 1977. You know, I've gone to school, educated myself, worked hard, long hours. And what I'd like to say is that the minimum wage has never been considered by most of us to be a living wage. And somehow this perception that you can even live on that wage, I'm not sure where this is coming in, because I don't think it was ever really meant to be that.
Well, Mark, you certainly have mirrored what a lot of people have said today, and I thank you for making the call. Appreciate it.
Yes, and Alan, one more thing. Sure. I think the market determines the value of each one of us. I don't think government can really artificially try to impose a value on a certain task or certain...
So are you against... So does that mean you're against raising the minimum wage?
I'm not against it. I'm against the government trying to determine what that is. I think your private sector is the best... has the best knowledge.
Well, but if the private sector wants, I don't get it. If the private sector wants to pay you $3 an hour and can get away with it, then how are you, on the one hand, talking about how difficult minimum wage is, and number two, allowing for the exploitation by private business?
If there was a shortage of workers wanting to work for that amount of money, I would say you're right. But it seems like there's more people out there than there are minimum wage jobs.
Well, okay, I'm glad you called. You know why? Because you're not doing what everybody else did, and I always like to hear different ideas. Thank you, Mark.
You got it, Alan.
Thanks.
Take care.
Yeah, bye. Mm-hmm. Okay, let's go to Michelle in Syracuse. Michelle, you're on.
Hey, how are you?
I'm good. Except I'm a little deaf. Speak up.
I live in a little bit of a dichotomy. I make an excellent salary, and my husband makes minimum wage.
Okay.
And so we are a young couple, and...
How young? How young are you?
We're 27 and 28.
Okay, go.
So, I'm sorry about that. I'm trying to make
That's
it a little louder for you.
Oh, good.
And so we've started to talk about having a family, but if I go on maternity leave, we wouldn't be able to afford to have a child and me go on maternity leave with his $300 a week.
Right.
And so it's changing, and it's similar for many of my friends who... I live in the Syracuse area, which is not a hotbed of industry, where our spouses may not make as much money, and we're putting off having a family until a time that we can afford to do so.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, it's a big challenge, you know, when I'm making in the 25th percentile, you know, I'm paying 25% in taxes when, you know, my husband's salary really warrants more of 15%. It's interesting to see how it'll play out in the future. If there are more opportunities for him to make a little bit more money, then maybe we could consider having a family in the future.
I loved your call, Michelle. Thank you for making it. Appreciate it. Okay, let's go to Jim in Lanesboro. Jim in Lanesboro, 1-800-348-2551. Go, Jim.
Well, about three or four nights ago on All Things Considered, they had a piece on the minimum wage for servers hasn't gone up in 22 years. It's $2.83 an hour. And they said there's two NRAs in Washington, like in terms of strong lobbyists. One is the Rifle Association, but the other is the Restaurant Association. And Herbert Cain had been or is the president of that. So they were saying, you know, this number of servers, waitresses mostly, living on food stamps and IHOP, you know, making like $5 a night if it's a slow night. I just think that should be part of the debate, is the servers haven't had their minimum wage raised in 22 years.
But I've never understood that. So, and I'm not being, this is not, I hope you understand that I'm just asking a question.
Yeah.
Isn't that figured based on tips plus?
Well, even like I discuss it with the women, you know, that I know that are servers. And my sister had work on the Intercostal, and she would make $5,000 a night because people get $12,000 bottle of wines or more.
Right.
But that's what they were saying in the piece. They were actually picketing down in Washington. The servers are trying to organize because they realize without organization they won't have any leverage. But they were saying, like, even if you talk to some, you get tips, but a lot of waitresses that I know, and I'm not being sexist because most of the servers are female, but a lot of people might only tip them a buck. I've seen people walk out on a $40, you know, dinner, and the waitress will turn to me and say, "Jim, the guy didn't pay me anything."
What do you tip?
I tip minimum $10.
No,
even if I buy something that's $8, I leave $10 minimum tip.
Wow, that's impressive.
Well, only because I've been there. I was working in a restaurant, and what I got was a pizza at the end of the night. And I talked to the dishwasher, and he said, "Jim, I only get $20 a night." And I said, "Yeah, but Jose, Mike told me if I learn Spanish, I'll get $20 a night. I just get to take a pizza home."
Jim, let me ask you: are you do you think about unions at all? You know, we have the lowest union membership now ever, I believe, in the private sector at least. I've always thought that the moment things get bad enough, you mentioned the servers getting together and they wanted a union, that's when we'll find unions again, when the need is so strong that people are going to realize either you get together or you're not going to get make any movement.
Amen, brother. Because my family's union people. New York City, you know, New York City is a union town.
Indeed.
And like I say, when Jimmy Breslin, I think, was running, it was like, you know what New York's guilty of? New York's guilty of paying firemen and sanitation men enough money so they can send their kids to college. That's what New York City is guilty of. But outside the city, it's a whole different. People think that, you should be able to work for a buck an hour. And then, you know, around here, people have no respect for labor.
Well, no respect. I have a lot of respect for labor.
I mean, it's not fair, but I'm just saying when you grew up in New York, too, and you realize that, you know, and I was a rehab counselor, and there's a lot of people that aren't going to be able. The normal curve, 100 is mean, so 50% of the population has an IQ of less than 100. And the whole argument is if they wanted to get an education, they would get more money. I've worked with people that bust their back all day, and that's the best they can do, and they're getting like $8, $9 an hour.
Well, Jim, I loved your call. Thank you for calling. Appreciate it.
Thank you.
Right. Let's go to Judy in Dalton, Massachusetts. Judy, you're on.
Well, I agree with the man who just spoke, because I'm 80. My husband years ago, who's long deceased, said that a job should not exist where you're asking a man to put his time, which is of value to all of us, somewhere 8 hours a day and pay him nothing.
How come there aren't more like you?
That will and pay him so he can't even support himself and he has to go to a food pantry or something.
How come there aren't more like you, Judy?
Well, I don't know. That was our generation. We were union people.
Yeah.
Okay.
Well, thank you, Judy. Appreciate
you're welcome.
It. Yeah. Go to Michael in Troy. Michael, you're on.
Thank you. Thank you,
sure.
Alan.
Sure.
First opportunity in a long time to listen to Volkswagen, and it's been a very, very interesting show. I am an employer, small business, family business, thank God, long time. There are four members of the family who work more than 40 hours a week, but we have always had the need for part-time people to help.
Yep.
They are as important to our business as we are. They represent us to our customer. And I've always believed that you get what you pay for. No one working for us thinks less of our business because they're employees. They become part of the family. we love it when we hear someone speak in terms of us or ours. Mm. They're jointly our customers. So we're very fortunate. We have one part-time person who started with us 17 years ago and is still with us.
And why are they part-time? I'm sorry, Michael, I didn't get that part.
What is it?
Well, how come they're part-time? Why not full-time?
Because that suits them.
I see.
Mm-hmm. We also hire students.
Mm-hmm.
And so they have, today with college hours, they're very flexible in their time, but none of them want to work full-time. It would cut into class time and studying time. So we're able to bring them in at the holidays, but what I'm saying is that, you know, $9, we don't pay $9. We pay more than $10.
Uh-huh. Well,
and based on the amount of time that someone is with us, they get raises. It isn't like the big chains where you go in and you get minimum wage and you work there for 10 years, part-time or full-time, and you get what they pay. That's it.
Michael, you made your point. We're a little late. We have lots of people who want to get in on this, and I thank you for calling, and I admire you for, you know, for doing what you don't have to do. Thank you, Michael.
40 years.
Yep. Thank you, Michael.
Right.
Right. Let's go to Jay in Stockbridge. Hi, Jay.
Hey, how's it going? I was going to say profit's always made at someone else's expense, and there's only so much money to go around, but I do believe minimum wage should be raised, but the cost for services and products and food should be raised as well, and there should be, this is a radical thought, but the sliding scale based on income for businesses to charge, and therefore people that make less pay less.
I used to go to a physical therapist long, long time ago. And he had sliding scale, you know, he'd ask you your income up in the hills, and then you pay more if you had more.
Yeah, I think that might work, so, but it's radical. I don't know if people would accept it.
Well, I didn't like it, but I did it because I wanted the service.
Exactly. It's more of a commonwealth type thought.
Okay. Jay, thanks for the call. Appreciate it. Let's go to Scott in East Greenbush. Scott, you're on.
Hi, Alan. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
I have a very unpopular opinion, I guess. It hurts me to listen to some people as a small business owner. You know, I have a brick-and-mortar business. I pay, you know, school taxes, county taxes.
Yeah.
I generate a ton of tax income for the state and the government.
Yep.
And then I hear a lot of people talking as if I'm a bad guy because I don't believe the minimum wage should be raised. As a small business owner, when my rent is coming due or the electric bill or something, I have to put in a few extra hours. And I think that is part of the solution, you know?
What kind of business is it?
It's a restaurant.
Uh-huh. Okay.
So, you know, I mean, if I didn't own a restaurant, I've been an entrepreneur all my life, so it's hard for me to see any other way. But it would be easy for me. I would just get another job and work a few more hours or something. I mean, it just seems like not everybody realizes that they are potentially harming people like myself who, you know, work hard, generate a lot
of income. Okay, so because a lot of people have said a lot of things today. If the minimum wage gets raised and you have to pay it, Scott, will you go out of business?
Well, no. You know what I'll do? I'll buckle down and I'll work a little bit harder. But, I mean, that ends up costing me, let's say, $200-$300 a week over a month. You know, $800 a month. So that's money that, you know, I'm not going to have to expand. I'm not going to have to do something else. It's not as easy as raising your prices either, you know.
Right. And sure. If you raise the prices sometime, some people won't come, right? I mean, your business
right,
might fall.
Absolutely. Yeah. So that's not really a viable option.
Well, Scott, I want to compliment you for calling and being unpopular about this. It's very important to me to have every voice here, and I thank you for making the call. Thank you,
all
Scott.
Right.
Yeah.
Okay. Bye.
Let's go to Maeve. Welcome back, Maeve.
Hi, Alan. How are you?
Good.
What I wanted to say, people have been commenting that it's typically not small businesses that pay minimum wage.
Yep.
And if you would like to find some research that supports that, you can look at the Political Economy Research Institute out of University of Massachusetts. They have a whole research project about living wages and the way that changes in the minimum wage affect the economy.
Okay, bottom line, Maeve, you got, because we're out of time, but give me the bottom line on what that research shows.
What that research shows is that in places where they have raised the minimum wage or instituted living wage laws, there has actually typically been an increase in economic activity, not a decrease.
Okay. Thank you, Maeve. Call again, okay?
Okay.
Yeah. Let's go to Rick in West Stockbridge. Okay, Rick, go.
Hi, good afternoon. I'm a business owner, and we are certainly pay our employees well above the minimum wage.
What's the business?
I want to make it interesting.
What's the business?
We're an outdoor services company that
gotcha.
Works in three states.
Okay, go ahead.
I think what's ironic is the people who are the staunchest supporters and advocates of raising the minimum wage are the first people to get the cheapest service they can possibly afford, or I should say the cheapest service they can possibly get to have something done on their property, knowing full well that the people they're hiring exploit their employees.
Mm.
So it's, I think, a real irony that we've got these two different levels of intellect when it comes to raising the minimum wage, and then when they want to have something done on their own property, they try to get the cheapest service possible, knowing that the people they're hiring are without a doubt exploiting their employees. I just think it's an interesting irony.
Okay. Thank you, Rick. Appreciate
Thanks.
It. Yep. Let's go to, no, let's not. We're done. I'm so sorry, everybody. You've been great. The phones have been ringing all hour. We're out of time, and I want to thank you all for doing it. And everyone who called in, I really do appreciate, and I hate to leave anybody on the wire. Support for the Vox Pop comes from Glens Falls Hospital, Big City Medicine, Hometown Care, serving six counties in the southern Adirondacks in 28 locations, Twitter, Facebook, and glensfallshospital.org. Smith College Museum of Art presenting second Friday, March 8th from 4 to 8 p.m. Art and activities for all ages featuring Collecting Art of Asia. smith.edu/artmuseum. Paradise Copies, Northampton, Massachusetts, providing printing design for customers for over 20 years. From digital to offset, color copies, scans, logos, and more, ParadiseCopies.com. And Snow Farm, Williamsburg, a New England craft program offering creative arts workshops taught by master craftsmen, craftspeople for adults and teens, beginners and up, snowfarm.org. Thanks again, everybody, for joining us today on the Vox Pop. Remember, the conversation continues online at wamc.org/VoxPop. Again, wamc.org/VoxPop. Our engineer has been the incomparable Zach Malloy. Your calls were answered by Colleen O'Connell. Our producer is Patrick Donges. I'm Alan Shartok. On tomorrow's show, the first edition of our seasonal gardening program, stay tuned now for a news update.